The details behind the Diddy indictment, Taylor Swift's stalkers, Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Whoa, what's up, Jerry? I'm feeling good today.
Someone's excited.
Oh, man. Yeah, you thought yesterday I was insufferable. Today, my goodness, what a win for the New York Yankees. The best of the season by far. And just continue to add up all the things we've been waiting for this team to do over the last couple days. Add another one. This team has not come from behind at all this year. They haven't.
Well, they did in Toronto. They just didn't.
They just
win.
Didn't finish it off and get the win. Correct. But they haven't come back and won a game where they've been down by more than 3 runs. Last night, it's 5 after being no hit through 7. They come out there in the 8th. They get 2 from the Stanton home run, and then the at bats, Jerry. The at bats in the 9th inning, and we know now they had a little help with a little bit of a tell on the sliders. But the at bats in the 9th inning were something that we haven't seen from this team strung together. Even while they've been scoring a ton of runs, it was a thing of beauty. It was a great victory. It's the best win of the year. It's 4 games in a row. And everything has seemed to change since that play in left field by Cody Bellinger against the Mets and that double play. From that moment on, the Yankees recognize it's time to make tough decisions with aging players. They're putting the right players in the right positions. They're scoring a ton of runs. They're coming from behind. The Williams, the closer on the mound in the 10th. Everything was perfect last night, Jerry.
It's hard to argue. It really is. I mean, you know, you're watching that game, and I'm not going to lie to you. I went to bed. Sixth inning, I had enough. I will be honest with you, too. The pitching early, I mean, Marcus, I can't take it. Every batter's 3-2, and it's such a grind. And they're talking about, if the umpire's not going to give him the – and there were some pitches that were strikes that were called balls, I get it, that were right on the edge, and you do feel for him in that way. But even Paul O'Neill's like, if they're not going to give him that pitch, it's going to be a long night. It's tough to watch, but whatever. Sixth inning.
He can't live in the zone at all. He does not have the stuff to live in the zone.
And he doesn't throw hard enough, all of that, understood. Yeah. So I checked out. And I knew it was a no-hitter, but I also didn't expect it to be one. And then I wake up and I find out, and I watched the last 3 innings when I got here this morning. You know, the first thing you see is Yankees no-hit into the – I'm like, wow, he took that into the – it's so funny, too. So the kid, he no-hit innings, 7 no-hit innings, and he's got 2 strikes on Jazz.
Yes.
And then you get the base hit through the little hole on the right side, and what does Rice do? Next batter, base hit. It's like they couldn't buy a hit, and then they get 2 in a row. And don't – this sounds stupid, and I know that given the fact that you had the Stanton home run and you also had the Wells hit and you had the Judge sack fly, but the Volpe slide probably the best part of that play.
Yep.
It sounds like nothing, but the sack fly just to get on the board at 5-0 kind of gets you going a little bit. And then I heard this little note too. And I know he's been a starter, so it makes sense, but the first pinch hit home run of Giancarlo Stanton's career.
He's been terrible at it.
How about that?
Yeah, no, he's been terrible at it, and Boone talked to it. It's a different role for him, but you know, throughout most of his career,
he plays.
So it's the odd day. Like, this is now going to have to start to be something he does regularly because he's just not a necessarily everyday player, but eventually I think he'll get there. But yeah, and the thing about it too, Jerry, with the no-hitter, is I talk about how this felt different. It felt exactly the same for a lot of the game because you said to me out in the newsroom, the first 2 batters, he can't throw a strike.
I know.
He get the Yankees start after scoring all these runs, this great pitching staff that we hear about Seattle. Wu's had this incredible year. He comes out, he can't throw a strike, first 2 guys up and Judge up with nobody out and first 2 runners on, and they squander that opportunity.
Big time.
And then they get no hit for the next 6 innings. And you're like, no, I've seen this script before. Yeah. I've seen this exact game from the New York Yankees.
And it also felt, watching it again through the 6th inning, it felt like, hey, we won the first 2 games of the series. This kid's dominating.
Right.
And I know the guys are going up there trying to hit. Get that.
Right.
But it just felt like one of those, you know what? We won the series.
Yeah.
Let's move. And yet, no, there was a lot of fight from this team.
Fight, Jerry.
And it's 4 in a row now. And you are right. Maybe this team has righted the ship. Again, big weekend coming up against the Cubs.
Yep.
But you have to love what they've done the last 4 games. Still 2 out, but that to me means nothing in July. And they're across the board. You got good at bat after good at bat. And Volpe strikes out on the one I thought was a bad pitch. It was probably borderline,
but
whatever.
Yeah.
Then he's got an opportunity. He flies out. But then he starts the inning at second base with the ghost runner, which I can't stand, after Devin Williams was fantastic in the top half.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got Volpe. He ends up at third base with the I know they tried to bunt, and then you get the intentional walk in the walk. So you got the bases loaded. That ball is not hit far.
Nope.
That is a damn good center fielder. And the fact that he makes, I mean, a hell of a slide. I know it ain't going to get the fans off his back for long. Mm-mm. But he essentially wins that game last night.
No. It was a terrific slide. And, yeah, there's a like we know Dominguez can run, Jazz can run, Volpe can run. That's part of the athleticism of this team that we were looking forward to when the pivot was made off of Juan Soto. But, yeah, no, you have to take that chance. Absolutely. It doesn't matter how shallow it is. You got to take the chance to score there. And his ability to give that slide, it wasn't so much the prototypical, like, swim where you really give out the left and then go to the right, but it was an incredible slide. He's a very good base runner. He does do some things well, believe it or not. And, yeah, absolutely, that moment. And what I hate about replay, by far, my least favorite thing about replay is end-of-game situations like that are in the balance. Mm. Like, you can't celebrate in the moment. You even saw it from the Yankees. There was a very tempered... They didn't even jump out of the dugout right to start. Like, you have to wait until that replay, and the ball beat him. The ball beat him by a mile.
Oh, for sure. And it was a good throw.
It was a good throw. Yeah. The ball beat him by a mile. I thought he was going to be called out. You know, pessimistic Yankee fan. I thought that was going to be an out. And to see that slide and for it to be Volpe, and he had an opportunity in the ninth, like you said. Yep. He was unable to come through. But still, important slide, huge part of the win. Hopefully this could be something that can spark him. You know, people have been sparked by weirder things.
Yep.
So hopefully this is something that can turn it around. I did see a lot of Yankee fans on Twitter because I do monitor Yankee Twitter because I'm insane. They were a little bit acknowledging,
they
like,
should.
Hey, great slide. You got to give him credit where credit is due. Wish he would have come through in the ninth, and he still can't hit, but that was a very impressive slide from Volpe.
And I know we'll get to the Mets next hour. I'm not going to spend much time on them right now, but, you know, I think you're right that, like, one thing can get a guy going in the other direction. I was listening to the first game of the Met game, and Anthony Recker was doing the game on radio, and he was talking about when Vientos hits the double, you know, maybe this, because he wasn't expecting to play. You had the injury with Winker. You know, maybe this is the thing. You never know when it comes.
Right.
And I don't know about Vientos, but perhaps there can be some carryover. Volpe comes in a little more confident today, feels pretty good about himself, and maybe we will look back the same way we just might look back on the Bellinger play and say where the season turned. Maybe, just maybe, that's the type of play that gets Volpe going in the right direction.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you hope. You hope he can do it. The general manager to come out and spoke to the fact that he's going to be the solution more than the problem. He's not going anywhere. He is the Yankee shortstop. That's not going to change, at least for the rest of this year. And they need him to be better because, you know, you watch the games. I'm sorry. Like, I'm hoping it can spark him. But 2-0 counts, fastball counts, getting beat. You know, he's just, the swing's a little heavy. He's trying to do too much. He's clearly in his own head. He's been hitting, you know, 150 for the last month and a half. Like, it's bad. So hopefully this can be something that can spark him because they need a better play. And they need someone to lay down the bunt, Jerry.
They tried.
You mentioned
it. They
tried. Oh, my God. If you're going to hit .110 and literally be like the 324th player in Major League Baseball out of 327, you better lay down the bunt, Peraza. Oh, my God. It drove me absolutely nuts.
I don't. You know, it's one thing the older guys will call up and talk about. We don't bunt enough. We don't bunt enough. And they're probably not wrong in some degree. But I do think there are times when it's warranted to do it depending upon the stage of the game, who's up. But no one works on it.
No.
So it's almost like, and I know they're major leaguers, they're making a lot of money, they should know how to do it. Mm-hmm. It's just not a focus anywhere. So then when you ask a guy to go up there and do it, and he pops it up. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what you get.
He takes a fastball low in the zone and doesn't bunt that, and then bunts the slider that was up and puts it in the air. Very frustrating, but ultimately, just a classic win with classic at-bats.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift's stalkers, Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yankees playing winning baseball again.
They are, and they're playing, you know, fast baseball, and they're playing youthful baseball, whether it's Jazz doing his thing, as you said, Dominguez, who was on an absolute tear. Jason Dominguez is crushing it. You know, the funny thing
he did go 0-for-5 yesterday. I'm just saying. Well, 2 days ago.
I know he did. But then before that, he had 4 hits. He's rolling, man. And it just the athletic stuff that he's bringing to the table. I think that the Cashman stuff yesterday, and it obviously all ties into DJ, as you said. Now, we have talked about DJ LeMahieu. I mean, talking is an interesting way to frame it. More like begging, imploring, screaming, yelling for the Yankees to get rid of him. All right, and this is not, let's just beat up on DJ LeMahieu. He's a proud pro, but he lost his way, and he was physically diminished. And I'll always respect him as a player, but it was time to go, and the Yankees finally did the right thing. See, but we yell and we get passionate about a lot of things with all of our teams. General managers and owners cannot listen to us.
Correct.
Otherwise, they would become us. They've got to have some restraint, and they've got to understand that we don't always see what they see and what they know. However, with the DJ stuff, I think that the spark, the galvanized, whatever word you want to use, I feel like the Yankee world woke up a little bit. Yeah, I can't describe it any other way than that. Like, you talk to any Yankee fan today versus 2 days ago, it was stale, it was downtrodden, it was going in the wrong direction. I feel like a lot of other Yankee fans feel right now that things have changed, certainly a little bit on the diamond, but I think most importantly, there's been a little bit of a philosophical tweak, and I think that that's coming from Hal. Well, it's about time. It's about time you ate some of this money, but the Yankees were unable to move forward until they did something like this that we've been begging them to do for years.
Yeah, I don't know if I would say that it's Hal. I just think that the Yankees, to use your word, experimental mode for way too long, and then all of a sudden things got real when they started getting pasted by the Blue Jays and losing a series to the Mets who had no pitching and falling out of first place. It's like, okay, time to make some moves here. And Jazz clearly was not thriving at third base.
Oof.
So now they were giving LeMahieu some runway, figuring, all right, well, we're paying him. He's a proven vet. He was a great Yankee, 2019, 2020, whatever. Gave him some runway. Clearly, it's over. Like, it's been over, but they gave him extra time just to make sure there was nothing left to squeeze out of DJ LeMahieu. He could not physically play third, meaning he couldn't make the throws. So he acknowledged that. The Yankees know that, which means if you're going to take him off of second base, which he wasn't very good at anyway,
no.
There is no use for DJ LeMahieu. And I told you this weeks ago or days ago, whatever. DJ LeMahieu's done. There is not a team that's going to pick him up. So I'm curious to see now what's going to happen with the next phase of him.
Hoff wants the Mets to get him.
I mean, that's absurd. No team should touch DJ LeMahieu, and I don't think any team will. Unfortunately for him, like, it's sad. Yeah, sure, but we're in the business of trying to win games.
Yeah.
He'll be fine. He's getting paid $22 million to do nothing. Show me a person in the entire world that wouldn't take DJ LeMahieu right now. $22 million to go away. Oh, he loves the game. That's great. He had some success. He's a big leaguer. He's getting paid $22 million to go home. Not to mention all that he's made. So he'll be fine, and the Yankees are going to be better off for it. Putting the pieces in place. We went over what the lineup should look like with Dominguez leading off. Now, there are still some issues. It's not a perfect thing here, whether it's Dominguez and the question marks about the outfield, whether it's platooning Ben Rice and either Goldschmidt or figuring out what you want to do with Stanton and maybe use Dominguez as DH. But they found a leadoff hitter, at least against right-handed pitching with Dominguez. And by the way, the Yankees, two straight days with the same lineup.
Yeah, I know.
Hallelujah.
Yeah.
Hallelujah, Booney. Thank God. I never thought I'd live to see the day. Goodness gracious, and you see what's going on here. So it's nice to see the Yankees. It's refreshing, BT. Trimming the fat, getting rid of an unproductive player in LeMahieu, putting Jazz back at second, and having a consistent lineup for two games in a row.
Well, I mean, listen, you bigger picture, and the lineup thing is, you know, oh, hopefully that continues. It's certainly not going to change today. I mean, if Booney messes around with it today, you know, we're going to have a little bit of an issue with our buddy Booney here. I mean, come on, stick with the winning streak here, pal. And I would imagine that he will. See, but again, bigger picture, like when you get rid of somebody like DJ, and you're right in the sense that there's no more value, like for the Yankees to continue to employ him, you're not going to use him as a pinch hitter because right. He's got no thump. He can't run, so he's not going to step on the bases for somebody, and he can't really handle defense in the middle of the diamond in terms of quickness at second. He's got no arm for third, so he's not going to be a defensive replacement. There truly was no more value for him. Right. So that's the obvious stuff. But what I love about this, and again, I feel badly for the guy, not in the sense that he's, you know, his life is broken in terms of the money and the other stuff, but I do think you gloss over his love of the game. Like, I get it. I'd switch spots with him right now. Hey, WFN, you want to give me $22 million to go away? See ya. I'll do something else. I get that.
But that's not our problem.
I know it's not our problem, but I like to acknowledge it because he is a baseball player. I mean, they all are, literally, but he's a grinder. And I respect that. And I know that it's like his heart's stomped on today because his career's over in all probability. And I just want to be a little sensitive to that. But bigger picture, I love that this sends a little bit of a message, unspoken, to the rest of the Yankees. Like, there was a staleness that permeated this team because I don't think anybody felt that there was ever going to be a repercussion for not doing your job. And if you and not just obviously the 70s when it was the Wild West and the Bronx Zoo, literally, but I mean, even in the 90s, you know, if you didn't get the job done, you're out, man. And even, you know, in the early 2000s, you didn't get the job done, you're out. It was volatile, it was unpredictable, and when you are When you are worried about losing your job, you generally focus more and lock in more. And unfortunately, DJ's a bit of a lab rat in this experiment. But I think the rest of the locker room picks up on that. And so you get rid of a player who's no longer good anymore. And you also show everybody else, hey, dead weight. If we can get rid of a batting champion, you could be next.
Right.
Get in line.
And to Cashman's credit, we as fans have no patience. And that's what we loved about George Steinbrenner, is that he operated the way that we would. This guy isn't getting it done for 2 weeks. Get him out of here.
Sometimes love. Let's not overly romanticize it. He butchered and made our life miserable for a lot of years.
I understand. He also was a great winner and holding guys accountable. Now, maybe overdoing so, meaning like, hey, you really shouldn't make a judgment in a bad week or a bad month or one bad year. And the Yankees now with Brian Cashman leading the way, they gave DJ LeMahieu every opportunity the last 2 years.
I know.
If I'm saying cut him 3 years ago, they gave him, he was coming into the year as being their leadoff hitter, and he kept getting hurt, and they still want to salvage it. No, maybe he could do this. Maybe we could figure it out at second base, maybe third, whatever. They gave him every opportunity to now where they don't have to question. It wasn't a rash decision, and they don't have to question it. They evaluated it every which way they could for more way longer than they should have, similar to what they did with Gallo and Hicks.
Mm-hmm.
Like, instead of getting rid of those guys when we felt was the right time, which, by the way, would have been the right time because they never recovered, but they waited and waited and waited, and really not much damage was done. They were in the World Series a year ago, and this year everything is still fine, meaning that it was the experimental phase, whatever, they've moved on. But yes, accountability finally from the Yankees, and just doing the right thing for your baseball team. It's nothing personal. It's that he could not help the team. Like, at the bottom line, it's not the fans didn't like LeMahieu. It's that they want to see the team win. So what's better for the New York Yankees? Is it to roster DJ LeMahieu because he once was good and because you like him and because you're paying him a lot of money? No, he doesn't fit the roster because he's washed up. It's over. It's been over. It's a sunk cost. You give him the $22 million to go away, and now you're a better ball club because of it, and they will get even better when they get a third baseman.
Yes, and listen, obviously there's a lot to discuss because Cashman spoke, and we'll get into all that stuff. But, too, I think there's other elements here. And I said this the other day. I can't prove this, and maybe this will come out in the wash, and eventually we'll get the answer. I think a lot of the reason, Sal, why the Yankees kept DJ LeMahieu employed for as long as they did, Aaron Judge. I really believe that. I can't prove that, but I really believe that, you know, the relationship between Judge and DJ was almost, you know, too respected from a Yankee perspective. And then finally just got to a point where it's no longer tenable. If you can't do your job, you just simply can't stick around. So I think that that's part of it. I think that now there are still pieces that I would sell because I already, don't think for a second I'd get hit with that on social media because I was obviously happy last night. Oh, a couple days you want to sell. Now you're pumped up. Well, first of all, I am pumped up. And yes, I still want to sell. Two things could be true. But I think what this does now, it presents a lack of temptation and a complete absence of temptation to go back to a guy who was absolutely cooked. And now there's other things to address, and it seems like Cashman is ready to strike aggressively.
Isn't it wild, though, how, and this is what I'm saying, like, just a couple of days changed the feel with everything with baseball. It's been three games. And now it feels like, well, everything is back to normal. Yankees are the best team for the majority of people. I'm not talking about you or saying, like, the feel a week ago was that the Mets were left for dead and it's going to get worse after what happened with the Pirates. The feel 3 days ago with the Yankees was, the Blue Jays may bury them. And it's a long season, and there were legit reasons to believe in the Yankees if they just decided to make some small, we know they need a third baseman. We obviously know they need bullpen help. And Cashman, that was the one thing you said definitively, pitching is always about pitching. They're going to get a third baseman, but they will get pitching, whether it be starting rotation, bullpen, both, who knows. But they will add. But with a couple of small moves, Jazz back to second, which was right there for the taking. You don't have to give up anything for that. Doesn't cost you any money. Doesn't cost you any prospects. You move him back to second. You move on from the dead weight of DJ LeMahieu. You're already better for it. You leave Dominguez in the leadoff spot. The energy has changed around this ball club. I don't expect that the Yankees are going to score 8, 9, 10 runs a game. We've seen them bully teams before, but it's starting to look a lot better, certainly offensively and defensively at the very least for the Yankees in the last few days.
Well, it has changed, and it does look different, and it feels better, and it's certainly like the Mets stabilized things against the Brewers. They came back and then obviously carried into the Subway Series and had a really nice win the other night before last night's rainout, so we know the path of the Mets. I was not able to see such a similar, at least quick renaissance for the Yankees, because I didn't think that the Yankees were going to do these basic things that they should have done a long time ago. Understand what the Yankees force-fed their fans and the lineup court every night. And not good. An amazing second baseman not playing second base. You know, another guy who can't move, playing far too often. And this is one. I know he doesn't hit from the right side. I get that, but what are the young, explosive, dynamic, multi-tool players? Certainly on the Yankees, if not baseball, and Dominguez, who shows more and more each night. They weren't even playing him every night. So those were three basic things that I didn't think that they would do. And now, certainly, I didn't think that they would DFA DJ. I saw that. I was genuinely surprised. And I was in the car at a it's funny. I get all these alerts. You texted me when they fired Tom Thibodeau. That's how I found out. Yeah. I was listening to music after the show that day. After, having Tiki for a little bit. Then I want to hear music. Yesterday, I'm at a stoplight. And I just, bang open social media for a second. I got a couple texts, too. I'm like, wow, what DJs? I didn't think that they would do it. So there has been an awakening within the Yankees. I don't know. I don't know that this becomes suddenly the big, bad throwback vaunt that I'm going to outspend and I'm going to bludgeon everybody New York Yankees. I hope it is. I'm not saying that. But at the very least, whatever they morphed into, and I know they were in the World Series a year ago, and we certainly appreciate that, but whatever they morphed into from a financial responsibility or a reluctance to move on from guys, it just seems like yesterday the Yankees turned the page. We're thankful for it, but I'm also here to say it's about freaking time.
All right, you said there was an awakening. What changed? Why do you think that's the case? For me, the answer is because all these years we could say, not good enough, not good enough. They could say 90 wins postseason, 90 wins postseason, World Series, whatever. The thing that changed was they got beat up by the Blue Jays, swept in four games and knocked out of first place, which never happens. And then they lost two out of three to the Mets, whose pitching was depleted. So they lost 6 of 7 games to the Blue Jays and the Mets. That, to me, was the flare signals or the flare shot, whatever you want to call it, hey, we can't just keep rotting this out and experiment much longer. Things have to change before it gets too far worse, and all of a sudden we're buried. So I think the losing 4 to the Blue Jays, losing 2 out of 3 to the Mets, that expedited both these decisions, which has resulted in much, much better baseball, even if just for a couple of games.
I think you probably identified, if not all, certainly some of the reasons and the impetus behind this. Yeah, I don't really disagree. Now, also understand this. The way the Yankees started the season, which was fun, and certainly, listen, you bag a lot of early wins, you're going to be in a good position no matter how much you stumble during the summer, which the Yankees generally do right about now. But think about how they were doing it. Aaron Judge was hitting .415, and Trent Grisham was an all-star. And for the first, basically, 6 or 7 weeks of the season, I was joking around with Sal, hey, did Soto catch Grisham yet? Like, Soto was a little bit down, but the point really, a little jab having fun, but really the other point was to illuminate, geez, Grisham is having a hell of a year. So you knew that Judge wasn't hitting .410, that's the point, and you knew that Grisham wasn't going to bang 35 home runs and hit .309, right? So you knew things would change, and they did. Judge came down a little bit because he's human. Grisham's not playing every day, which I love. Now you've also lost Clark Schmidt, but the thing that you said, all right, now I'm not going to give the Met fan all the meat that maybe they're seeking in relation to this one point, but I'll give you a couple of slices, right? I think it's naive to think that the Yankees on some level didn't react or aren't reacting to the Mets. Because when the Mets, historically, outside of, a couple of years, the Met fans would provide the negative energy and would almost put the Yankees off the hook. You know what I mean? Now that the Mets are on a bit of a rise here, and you got Soto and obviously Cohen spending money, I believe, competition breeds competition. And forever, the Mets were never competition for the Yankees, and they are now, at least in terms of the spirit of the city, if you will, right? And I think that that's a little fuel. I mean, we could sit here and say, hey, Hal's not his pops, but I mean, Hal's not some dolt who's sitting there that doesn't care about the Yankees and doesn't want to win. He wants to win differently than his dad. He projects it differently. But I promise you, any highlights or being obscured by the Mets or any shrapnel coming his way, the man's got a tolerance. He's got a limit. And I feel like he finally hit it. And for Cashman to DFA DJ, that Hal had to say, cut the check, get rid of him.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Never mind. Cam Schlittler was great.
Good as Schlitt.
Yes. We can't help ourselves.
It's the dad joke day. Look, I think we probably could have seen this coming simply because of how well he was pitching in the minor leagues this season. And his velocity is jacked up from 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Hitting 100, that first strikeout where they saved the ball. It was a beautiful, as perfect of a pitch as you could throw. And just froze the Mariners. What was this catcher's name? Cam Riley. Cal Riley. And it was special to watch that kid. And it was fun to see his family's reaction.
Oh, it was great.
And the standing ovation as that it got repopulated on social media. It just got, like, people set it to music and all this other stuff.
Great.
It just gives you chills. Like, you love those type of stories to see young kids come up and achieve. And so, a clap of the hand. For Cam Schlittler, who did a fantastic job last night.
There's obviously a couple different avenues to go with the Yankees. Suddenly feel rebirthed and rejuvenated over the last... Scoring tons of runs. Maybe the joke about Cody Bellinger's catch saving the season has some merit. But what I really appreciated about last night above anything else, and look, we come in here every single day and break down baseball games every single day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's part of the ride for 162 games. Last night with Cam Schlittler on the mound... For me, both as a fan and working here at the Fan, I thought it broke up the monotony. It reminded me that for all the screaming and yelling we catch ourselves in moments about, last night was just cool.
Because it was different.
It was different.
It felt fresh and new despite being the same one of 162.
Exactly. The Yankees right now are at a spot where I cannot believe I'm saying this when you consider where they were a week ago. They don't feel stale. And Cam Schlittler's effort last night and everything that went along with it and walking out to that ovation and seeing his parents hug, like, that was a moment what sports is all about.
Right.
And every year, every couple years, maybe you have a prospect come up and they either work out, they don't work out, they have a moment. And I have no idea what the future of Cam Schlittler in the major leagues is going to be. Maybe he is the future ace of the New York Yankees.
Could be.
Maybe.
Big kid. 6'6", 6'20". I mean, maybe.
Maybe last night is the moment of his career, and I hope not for him. Maybe with that velocity, he turns out to be the future closer of the Yankees. Maybe he's traded in 2 weeks for Eugenio Suarez. But whatever it is, like, last night is why you watch sports. And it was just, how cool was that for the family? How great was that for the Yankees? And I think for the Yankees themselves, on a day where they dumped DJ LeMahieu and he wasn't happy about it, to inject that, I think it was almost the perfect balancing act, right? Because it would have been very easy for some of those veterans in the Yankee clubhouse to be like, man, this is a tough business. Look what happened to our friend DJ LeMahieu. But what Cam Schlittler brought to them last night, I think was the perfect recipe to inject some youth into this
team.
It
was, and it injected some energy into this Yankees team and just the organization and the fan base and everyone involved. It was interesting. I briefly caught Keith last night, and he was talking about how the DJ LeMahieu DFAing finally showed that the Yankees are getting serious, right? This is as we kind of briefed on, at some point you have to make a decision of what's our postseason roster going to look like. Like, we're not just going to waffle along and go through the motions and have it feel like, oh, we'll figure it out when we get there type of situation. The earlier you start to get your roster right, the better your chances are of finishing strong at post All-Star break, post trade deadline, into the latter part of the season, and into the postseason. And it always feels like the Yankees just kind of, all right, we'll get there. Don't worry about
it.
We'll think about doing something at the trade deadline, but we have it all right here in front of us. We don't have to worry about going to get a new arm or a new bat or whatever the situation may be. We're fine. We'll figure it out. And if we don't, then we'll just flip the switch and turn it on. That doesn't work, man.
It doesn't.
You got to get yourself right at this point in the season. And for previous seasons, you could look at the Yankees and be frustrated. This week, for whatever reason, it feels like they're actually being proactive as opposed to reactive to the issues that have been plaguing them.
We all have had relationships in life, whether that is friendships, boyfriends, girlfriends, husbands, wives, siblings, parents, grandparents, where everybody has this moment in life where you just get really frustrated with each other.
Right.
And it maybe it just takes like, I got to yell at you, you got to yell at me back, and this explosion.
Right.
And
I love you, but F
yeah,
you.
I hate this about you. I can't stand this about you. The business. Oh, that's what you think about me. Bah, bah, bah. And it almost feels like this week, the Yankee fan frustration and the Yankee organization frustration had a metaphorical fight with each other. We can't take this. Or I can't stand you about this. And we both have come to a mutual understanding that we need each other. We're not going to leave each other. We love each other. And the Yankee organization has answered back in a big way. And the DJ LeMahieu DFA is a part of that. But you know what else it did? When you bring up Cam and he throws a game like that, and it's not now, they've already announced he's going to make another start. And the DJ moment like that where he's a veteran, Johnny Loizaga, look out for this, what I'm going to say next. Everybody's on alert now.
Yeah.
The Yankees are now taking their roster serious enough that you're not just handed a job. If you are not producing, provided we are looking to get deeper, looking to get more flexible, and if Cam Schlittler keeps pitching like that and Luis Gil comes back and you keep him up, guess what? Marcus Stroman, you're on alert tonight. Right. Will Warren, you're on alert to keep pitching this way.
They always say this in football. You hear it and it annoys the hell out of me because it's such a dumb cliche. Iron sharpens iron. You got a great wide receiver and a great defensive back room. They're fighting it. Iron sharpens iron. I don't know if that's true because it's never really full go in practice like that. But when it gets to produce or be gone, as it seems like the Yankees have just recently done, that's iron sharpening iron, meaning I'm competing as a teammate with the success that you just had, right? This is like my life growing up, right? My brother and I always identical twin brothers, right? Doing the same stuff all the time. If he did something well, I had to do something well. If I did something well, he had to do something well. I mean, it drove us to the successes that we had in our athletic careers. And so I think that happens on teams, especially teams that are close and feeling each other. And I don't know how close this Yankee team is, but I feel like this is the moment where you get close and then you drive each other.
Absolutely.
And ultimately, everybody rises because of it.
And I think you're seeing that. Now, on Cam specifically, CJS, as we tried calling him yesterday.
I kind of like that still.
I do too. I don't want to sound like a foolish Yankee fan. I do that far too often anyway. But I am excited after what I saw from him. And it wasn't just the fact that he pitched well.
Yes.
I mean, he had 9 of the 10 highest velocity pitches pitched by a Yankee this year.
That was bizarre.
That was bizarre. Like, think about that. You can't teach that kind of arm talent.
But how has there not been a Yankee that's hit 98?
You know, the guy last year was Luis Gil. So he hasn't pitched this year. Look, Rodon has learned
Cole,
how to
Cole
pitch
could
more.
Get up, could right. ramp it up every now and then, not all the time.
Then Max Fried's more of a pitcher.
Yeah.
He's not going to get up and strike you out with these 100-mile-an-hour fastballs. And they haven't had that at the pen. It was shocking. But that velocity plays.
No
and
doubt.
His look, his attitude, he was like a weird cross version of A.J. Burnett and Gerrit Cole with the hair, the tattoos. When it comes to pitching and getting big league outs, you know how the eye test, right? You just watch somebody pitch, but then they also have to have a certain way they carry themselves and a swagger about it.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. Cam Schlittler felt like that.
He definitely did.
And these words could come back to haunt me.
He wasn't intimidated by the moment.
No.
Now the thing I got to figure out is the tattoo on his left arm. Like every time I look at it, I see something different, so I don't know what it is. So I need to get a close up at some point. This will be in my next rabbit hole.
Okay,
like, what's that that tattoo?
Yeah,
for a 24-year-old kid, I mean, it's kind of badass.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, what kind of experiences that you have you had to get that tattoo?
Oh,
and so
please do me the favor of looking at that. I did the old, hey, those are tattoos. I didn't look too far into.
Well, tattoos have meanings. I mean, I have a bunch of them. You can't see most of them, but they all have meanings. And so it's just things like that interest me because it tells me
a little
bit about the person.
Because
we don't know him yet.
No, we don't.
He just come up. We seen him. He had some success last night. He got a standing ovation as he left the mound after 5 1/3. And it just feels like, man, this kid is going someplace. But who are you?
Who are you?
Right? And we know you were at Northeastern. You had a tough third season, which is why he fell in the draft. And the Yankees snatched him up and he's improved after his 2023 year, which was like kind of average in the minors. And last year he was awesome, fantastic player, and it set him up for where he is now. But who is he?
Who is
he? What's he about? I don't even know what he sounds like.
No, I don't either. And it was great, obviously, watching his family. But here's the next pivot question I have. Because the other big party yesterday was Brian Cashman speaking about going to town at the trade deadline. And Jeff Passan dropped an article today on where he thinks the fits. He, again, is really pounding the Eugenio Suarez to the Yankees. And he even kind of dropped a little pixie dust that Emmanuel Clase and the Yankees could be a fit, obviously. But those guys are going to cost serious prospects. And Brian Cashman yesterday half jokingly caught himself and said some prospects are less touchable than the others or more touchable than the others. After we saw, and I'm curious to get our Yankee fans' thought on this, 888-808-1019. After you saw a taste of Cam Schlittler last night, and I want a second date with him, I want to see a second start, would you classify him as one of your less touchable prospects? Because that kind of arm talent doesn't grow on trees, but if you get a third baseman like Suarez.
God, it's a hard one, but I would not want to send him away after seeing what we just saw. This is his first appearance in the majors, and he's not afraid to throw a 100-mile-an-hour fastball right down the middle against the leader in home runs in Cal Riley in Major League Baseball. He challenged the best home run hitter in Major League Baseball this year. Look, the best home run hitter in baseball is King Aaron Judge, we're giving Cal Riley his flowers right now because he's leading. He's at 36 home runs for a catcher. It's unbelievable, especially pre-All-Star break. I mean, how many is he going to hit? He's going to hit 55 home runs this year? But Cal Riley has been fantastic, but Cam Schlittler didn't blink when facing him. Now, he did give up two home runs. Couple mistakes, but that is what it is.
His first major league start. And for anybody who just read the stat line, didn't read it, Johnny Loáisiga basically poured a gas can to the start that was Cam Schlittler, his earned runs and everything.
Right.
Okay, but Cam Schlittler was not one of their top five prospects, okay? Like Spencer Jones.
It's like 10 or 12 or something like that.
But this is why I bring this up. Obviously, any major league executive that watched him pitch last night, I think, would jump him up despite what rankings say. But from a Yankee fan perspective, we got to see this. And we know the Yankees do have a good track record, whether it's Clark Schmidt, Luis Heel, of actually developing the pitchers. It's the position players outside of Aaron Judge and we hope Jason Dominguez, where we have no trust at all. You haven't seen Spencer Jones up in this level. You haven't seen George Lombard up in this level. We now have seen Cam Schlittler. Is that a guy you're willing to part with, or you want to part with the guys you haven't seen on this level?
He's too tantalizing after last night.
I didn't know where you were going with this.
Too tantalizing.
I agree.
There are not a lot of 6'6", 225-pound, 24-year-olds who can hit and place 100-mile-an-hour fastballs and have that kind of confidence in a rookie debut. And no, I'm not saying that the Yankees are in desperation mode, but They need wins.
Right.
They need to continue to build some momentum. And as we alluded to yesterday, they catch a game on the Blue Jays, who again lost yesterday. And so they're now 2.5 back in the AL East. It makes you feel like you can take a deep breath with him around. Now, start two will be different.
Right.
It could get blasted.
He could.
But right now, it feels exciting to have Cam Schlittler as a guy in the back of this rotation right now.
I purposely did not tweet this at Sean Morash on Twitter because, you know, I didn't need old takes exposed coming after, but I'm going to say it into a microphone right here on WFAN. I thought long and hard this morning, and I had no idea where you were going, so that's why I tried to gauge you. If I'm making trades at the deadline, you can take your Spencer Jones, you can take your George Lombard. I've seen enough after one start. Cam Schlittler is untouchable for me. He is one of those don't-touch prospects for me. And I don't want to hear
where he's
ranked.
Because he's so far down.
I know, but
it's funny. It's like when you listen to Smooze yesterday, we listened to, he's like, "Can you smell desperation?"
Right.
It's Cam.
Typical Steve.
Slitter.
Right, and we'll work on saying his name, but you could have all the attributes you want. You can't teach, I'll just say for lack of a better term, the balls he had, and you just can't teach the swag he has, and you can't teach the velocity he has.
Right.
And it is so hard to find pitching like that as we look at Gerrit Cole getting older. We don't trust Carlos Rodon, Stroman coming off the books, Schmidt and a Schlittler. I just thought of that for the first time. He's going to be out all of next year. If I'm now starting to re-rank prospects in my own eyes, prospect ranking magazines be damned. Go get Eugenio Suarez or Clase with a Spencer Jones and a Lombard. don't touch Cam Schlittler. 888-808-1019.
BT, we started the show talking about the Yankees. Mets rained out last night. They will play two today. Game one starting at 12 o'clock. A split double dip in Baltimore. 12 o'clock, 5 o'clock, so we'll be able to watch the Met game together here for the final 2 hours of the show. Talking Yanks right now. Peter is in Sussex County, New Jersey. What's up, Peter?
Thank you very much for putting me on, and good morning to you guys. First off, Pete? You guys need to take credit for yourselves, the whole station, because on Tuesday, everybody was shaking the Yankees up because the Yankee fans were on the air telling these guys what they need to do. And you know what? They're doing something. But I'm going to tell you something. They're still out of place in this way. The Jason Dominguez needs to be playing center field. They need to utilize his speed to catch those balls in center field. He is an experienced center fielder. He never played left field until he came to the Yankees this season. And they're missing out on Bellinger's arm. He showed you what he could do. And he's played left field all the time, if not first base, for the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Mm-hmm.
So they got that wrong right now. But they don't need a third baseman. You know, sometimes you need that defensive player. You've got that player right now at third base, and you have full control of this young man.
No, I want a third baseman. Hold on, Pete. I want a third baseman. Well, no, I want more. They need more.
They know they do. They're going to get a third baseman.
I think so, too.
But I'll tell you this, and I'll let you finish, Peter. What I would do is get a defensive third baseman. I'm not Suarez sounds great, and I'm not going to yell and scream and say it's not a great fit. I want somebody, how about this, that puts the bat on the ball and plays defense at third as opposed to another home run strikeout guy. Go ahead, Peter.
Well, listen, I'm not going to argue about trying to get better, but I'm thinking what they really need is the bullpen. Even last night's game, I was scared that they were going to throw that game away. All right? You score that many runs, you should be blowing out your opponent. That bullpen is a terrible spot in the old.
Loizaga is broken. You could just say it. I mean, he doesn't have a shred of confidence. He is just, he's batting practice. Now, maybe last night was the start. Let's not go nuts. The start of the rebuilding of Luke Weaver.
Yeah.
Maybe. Devin Williams, he looked pretty good last night. I'm still a little fearful of the big spot just because he hasn't done it in New York, and he was very, very shaky to start his Yankee career. And was that nerves? Was that lack of fastball, which didn't differentiate the changeup? I don't know. But they need two bullpen arms, they need a starter, and they need a third baseman. Like, this to me is the start. And I don't know if they're going to get all those. I think they're going to try. I do believe that Cashman's incredibly motivated to bring difference makers in. I don't know.
Give me one. Give me the biggest need. I know what you said. They need multiple.
They absolutely have to get bullpen arms.
Yeah,
you cannot win with these arms out there.
Agreed.
No
now,
chance.
I do think Weaver hit a little bit of a confidence issue. Some of it was just bad luck, too. He gave up the home run down his first game back right down the right field line with the Yankees Yankee Stadium.
Yep.
The other one, he was a victim of the catcher's interference, which led to George Springer.
In Toronto.
Yeah, now Springer's the hottest hitter in the game and tattooed one. Adam Ottavino was talking about this on Baseball Night in New York. The McNeil one was bad, but Ottavino brought up an excellent point saying, like, Weaver, because of the damage that was done to him, not as confident and not throwing the pitches that he should be throwing to McNeil in that spot. So I think Weaver will get back on track. Now, your point about Williams is a great one. I think Williams is fine. In the regular season, Weaver and Williams will be fine in the back end. But no matter what happens, come postseason time, you just can't trust them. You just don't know. But that's, you could say that about a lot of closers in Major League Baseball.
Outside of number 42, I mean, there's been even John Wetland, who won the MVP, the World Series MVP back in 96, was always walk with a tightrope, a walk, a bloop, and he'd have to wiggle out of it. Very few are like Mariano or Eckersley in his prime, or guys like Bruce Smith, Bruce Sutter or Lee Smith. So I don't need absolute perfect. I don't need Cooperstown material, but I can't have AAA arms setting up the closer. That's got to change.
Correct. And even with Williams and Weaver, if you say they're going to be at their best, the Yankees, to win a division, they're going to need at least one more arm. Loizaga's toast for at least this year. These bullpen guys, who knows, maybe bounces back at some point. But right now, they got to stabilize this year, especially with the injury to Clark Schmidt with the rotation. Schlittler looked good last night.
He looked really good.
Yeah, but
he
looked good. Okay, but are you going to rely? It's one start. No, it's 5 innings. I'm just saying, the Yankees need pitching. So as badly as they need a third baseman, and they do, and I think that they're going to get one, They desperately need, at the very least, bullpen arms and probably a starter, too.
You know, real quick, I was driving around last night. They had, like, football conditioning, the kids, right? So I just dropped Colt off at the field, and I had to go do some stuff. And I had the station on.
Yeah.
And I've listened to the pregame, and I wound up texting Susan. Susan was interviewing the scout who found Schlittler.
Okay.
Did I say that right? Yes, I think I'm not saying that right. Schlittler, yes. Right? Cam Schlittler. And... you know, his dad, I heard the story about his dad being chief of police up in Massachusetts and blue-collar kid. And the scout also found Volpe and Ben Wright. So it was a pretty good conversation. And then, and I didn't know this because I haven't really seen him pitch, a little bit in spring training at the end, but I don't really remember it. You know, we knew he threw gas. And last night he had 100 five or six times. And he did, you know, that was obvious. Effortless. He's 6'6". It's on you immediately. Do you know that he just developed a cutter this year, like in the spring, and his slider is 90. And again, I'm not going, that's one start, but you look at how he throws the baseball, and I think more importantly, his demeanor. Like, I watched his post-game interview. He wasn't all wrapped up and all gaga, like, wow, I can't believe I'm here. He's like, this is what I dreamt of. Very matter of fact, this is what I expect. It's great to help the team, and I can't wait to get the ball again.
Looks like he belongs, but forget about him for a second, because who knows? Again, it was his first start, but we'll see. The one thing that I think was evident, whether it's metrics or just your eyes, the Yankees need a power arm. Because he's the one guy already that threw the fastest six pitches that have been thrown this year.
Yes,
that can't happen.
You saw that stat. So that's a wild stat.
Whether it's in the starting rotation or certainly in the bullpen, Yanks can benefit from I think more so the bullpen. They need a power arm.
Well, I think they need two, actually. Yeah, okay, I do. I would say one in the start.
Maybe he could be it in the rotation.
Yep.
Even at the back end, filling the spot of Clark Schmidt.
He could be. He could be. And listen, Will Warren throws hard. Now, there's a lot of wild cards here with Rodon. You know, he's been a little wobbly against the good teams. We know the story with Rodon. Yeah, the stat that Sal just referenced here, his fastball average, four-seam fastball average last night was 98.7 miles per hour, the highest average fastball for any Yankee this year. Throws gas, dude.
BT and Sal on the fan. Manny's calling from New Hampshire. What's up, Manny?
Hey, man.
Good morning, boys. Let me get you off the box. I don't want to insult anybody by, you know, having too loud here. Thank you for letting me call. I wanted to say a couple of words, not in support. I mean, I would love to know what DJ thinks he could do. If you sat the man down and said, DJ, where do you think you fit on a pro team?
Yeah.
I mean,
a proud fighter.
Remember when we brought him up from Colorado?
Yeah.
And I'll give you this. Compare him to Devers. If you asked DJ to be the bat boy, he would have done it. I'm being a little on the far end of this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Devers is Devers. We know what that is. And I'm not a Sox fan. I'm a Yankee fan. But the bottom line is, DJ, how many positions did he play? He covered everything in the infield that I can remember. First base all the way around.
Okay, and it's over.
Great guy. But I wonder, seriously, I wonder what he would say. If you sat him down and said, what do you want to do? Do you think it's over? Yeah, I mean, I'd love to see the guy get a slot with the Mets.
What, the Mets?
Kind of a fill-in. Probably won't.
The Mets?
Yeah, continue to come to second base.
Are you insane, Manny? Are you insane?
No, I wouldn't put him on second base. I would see where he would fit.
Manny, let me ask you. Forget about asking LeMayu. Where do you think DJ LeMayu would fit on a ball club right now?
You know what? I don't.
Bingo.
I can't say. I know. I'm answering my own question. I know what I'm saying.
It's over. And we get it, Manny. And thank you for the call. Good stuff. Like, I get that part of it. LeMayu was a great Yankee for a period. The machine. The machine, unfortunately, is broken down. It's okay. Like, this happens. It's sports. It's life. You get older, you can't produce. LeMayu, I'm sure, wanted another shot to play second base. Problem is, he couldn't do it. Physically, he couldn't play third. He wishes he could, because maybe he'd still be here. If he could throw the ball across the diamond, he would probably still be at third base.
Which would not be good for the Yankees, because, again, he just doesn't hit enough and all the other things, doesn't run. You know, listen, the extra rope that he got, largely attributable to money, let's not fool ourselves here, but the thing that I never understood, like, that's a lot easier to accept. And I know you used the term great Yankee. I don't call him a great Yankee. He was a great champion.
Yankee. I understand that. His home run in the 2019
understood.
ALCS.
It was like, amazing.
I mean, that is one of the great moments that I remember in recent years with this iteration of the Yankee team.
I'm not dispelling that. I'm not disputing that. But like the Jeters and the Moes and the Birdies and the Tinos.
Yeah,
those are the great A-Rod. Come on, those are the great Yankee. He was good. He was a really good hitter. And really, he came at the right time because there were a lot of swing and miss. And
he was the perfect complement.
It was a good addition. And his bat-to-bowl skills, you know, really, especially from center field to the right field foul pole, was terrific. And just to answer the question that the caller brought up, like, what would DJ say if he was asked about what he could still do? Well, I started to say, but I wanted to let the caller go. You know, proud fighters are usually the last ones to know that it's time to just remain on the stool and not get up for another round. So he's probably in his own mind thinking, I could go somewhere, a team that's on the cusp of a championship, be that pinch hit or whatever it might be. But I will disagree with you in this regard. I absolutely think he's worth a veteran minimum pickup. I mean, for peanuts, you're paying him, I don't even know, I think it's $1,000, $2,000, whatever the vet minimum is. I would kick the tires on him. It just needed to end here.
Well, but what about him is appealing?
Well, like think about this.
I don't care what the price is. Okay, veteran minimum, that's great.
Yeah, I know. But if you're not getting anything, it's not worth a dollar.
Tell me what he... Seriously.
Well, I think he can play second base. I know he can't play... No. I know he can't play third.
I mean, physically, he can't play third.
Because of the arm.
And, correct. Like, he can't play third. Second, he's not good. He could play there. I just don't think he's good.
I don't think he's very good either in terms of range. Now he's got good hands. Now at least let's hop in, dude. I know you're foaming at the mouth.
Yes,
here.
I really am.
Come on. Let's go.
Okay,
this
so
guy
let me explain to you why. First of all, the Mets just lost Starling Marte, who was batting since June 1st, was batting .324 with a .794 OPS. Okay, what was DJ batting since June 1st.
About .320. He's been on a nice run.
.310, .754 OPS, 27 hits. I know he's a single
hitter. What was his OPS?
.754.
Yeah.
Which is better than a lot of...
Huff.
No. Hold on. Hear me out. I don't need him to play. I don't need him to play a position.
He's a waste of a roster spot.
No, it's not.
You know what the Mets should have got with you?
No,
they signed that stiff Jed Lowry instead. You know how much crap I got on social media years ago? When I said, matter-of-factly, boy, the Yankees won up the Mets again because they got LeMahieu and the Mets got Lowry. Go back and check that. I should retweet it and you look at the mentions. You idiot. The Mets. Jed Lowry's so much better. Meanwhile, LeMahieu goes on to be a batting champion with the Yankees. Yeah. Lowry played maybe 4 games. That's when the Mets should have got LeMahieu. Now, he's worthless. He's a waste of a roster spot. He can't field, can't throw, can't run, and he's maybe a singles hitter.
That's fine, but guess what? What do you think Starling Marte was? Marte wasn't like a doubles hitter.
Athlete, though, Huff.
But he's been hobbled. He could barely get to first base.
I still rather have Starling Marte.
He walked and could barely get to the first base.
And by the way, forget Marte. Vientos is going to get those at bats for now,
but he doesn't hit the ball anymore. There's a.
So you'd rather LeMahieu than Vientos.
I'm explaining to you why there is a veteran minimum for 2 weeks. Give him a shot. Give him 2 weeks. What's the harm with that?
You're wasting a roster spot.
But for what? So Mark Vientos can go up and strike out?
By the way, the Yankees don't have a third baseman. You don't think that they could use LeMahieu if he were worth it? They're paying him $22 million. What is LeMahieu going to do? You're going to keep him on the bench to have him be a right-handed DH and bat ninth? Be a slap hitter? No, thank you. Good God, he can't move.
How did you not see his tweet yesterday?
I ignored it. Yeah.
So, Huff, here's the only problem with it. And I'm a little more with you, not much. I mean, I'll give it an ounce of thought. Like, maybe he can regenerate a little bit and help a team out a little. Like, Sal's just slamming the door. I'm not quite doing that. But if you're going to support the guy, you got to spell the word here right.
He goes,
hear me out. H-E-R-E. Hear me out.
How did I spell it?
H-E-R-E. Hear me out.
Oh, I did? I didn't realize
that. Yeah, it's all good. Mention pick up DJ LeMahieu. And listen, you know,
I was multitasking. I think it was a game when it happened.
I don't know if you were just fishing for the engagement. I actually think you believe it a little bit. The problem is...
I do. I don't say crap that I don't... I'm not an idiot and go and say, let me get some clicks here. I'm not a moron like that. I don't do that garbage. I go out there, if I believe it, I say it. And maybe I spelled the word here wrong, but I do. I went and fully believe that DJ LeMahieu, for a veteran minimum, pinch hitting for the Mets, or maybe playing DH a couple games, is more valuable than Travis Jankowski!
Well, by the way, did you see they DFA Jankowski?
Yeah, thank God! Okay,
he dropped out a good punt the other night.
DJ.
And who's up? Who's up for Jankowski?
DJ?
Acuna.
Oh.
And they just brought Acuna back up.
Guess what? Can field at a high level, can run like the Dickens,
And
like the Dickens.
Isn't
what is this, 1920?
Yeah.
Grandfather Sal with his pipe and the fire pit, his bourbon.
Give me the new one. What would
no,
be the
you run like the wind, yeah, run like a gazelle, you. Run like a deer, you know.
Whatever. Dickens, like wind, whatever. But either way, he can field, he can run, and I like his offensive game.
Yeah, you like, I like Acuna too, but the only thing, that, and I'm going to side with Hoff again a little.
Not for the Mets, you're saying?
Or, no, but for the Mets, for a ticket, or anybody, just general concept, DJ's viability moving forward. Listen, there's no question. On a baseball field, Acuna at this point does everything more electrically than DJ. The one thing that I don't know that he could still do is, or that I think DJ maybe could still do, is give you a better at-bat in a high-leverage spot against a pitcher because his mind is still sharp, his contact rate is still pretty good. I'm not saying that's why you sign him, but Acuna, and I like him, two on, two out, up a run, down a run. Will he get overwhelmed by a deep arsenal for a veteran pitcher? I don't know, but I know the DJ won't get mentally overwhelmed.
Here's what I would do with LeMahieu if I were the Mets or anybody else. Oh, try to hire him as an assistant hitting coach. Maybe at this point he could be an assistant hitting coach. I don't want him anywhere near the diamond, though. No, not in between the lines. No, thank you.
I literally put this down for 7 o'clock because I thought the perfect person to ask would be someone like yourself or Boomer. That kind of understands what the player is going through and how real, you know, things like what we do are in the locker room. And it is magnified, I don't even think tenfold, but 100-fold now with the social media. Mm-hmm. You know, it used to be they booed Mickey Mantle, they booed Joe DiMaggio. And yes, you might have a columnist that might write a bad article, but like that was it back in the day. Then WFAN is born, and now you've got not only hosts, but fans screaming and yelling, and that's really all you dealt with pretty much, right? Was the sports radio aspect of it?
Sports radio, and obviously the beat writer.
And the newspapers.
And then the avid fan, that was it. Newspaper, right. Of course.
But your career ended before social media really took off to where it is now, which is just a cesspool. Well,
I wrapped up in 16, so it was really, really starting to take off. But, right. But it wasn't what it is now.
Right.
Yeah.
In just 9 years, I mean, it's through the roof.
100%.
And so I listened to the caller, I listened to Sal, and it's, you know, you want to take one side of it, but I got to tell you, I see both sides. I see the fact that Anthony Volpe is a 24-year-old that has immense talent. He, for the most part, has played a very good shortstop. Yeah, he's had some issues this year, but for the most part, he's been a really good shortstop. The hitting hasn't been what we've expected or needed. Now, I'm going to play devil's advocate with you. Fair enough. You got to be better. I'll be the first one to say you got to be better. But I also think when I look at a lineup that's got the likes of Aaron Judge, now Giancarlo Stanton, Cody Bellinger, Paul Goldschmidt, Jazz Chisholm Jr., for this to all of a sudden be all on Anthony Volpe to me is unfair. But I also can see how the kid can get in his own head by things like this and us and social media. Fair or not fair?
It's fair, but I also think, you know, just to kind of layer it up a little more, we're in a time where ball players who play the game have a voice, meaning because they're on podcasts, YouTube channels.
Sure.
So it hits different when a guy like a Gilbert Arenas or, you know, even, you know, Carmelo has a 7 p.m. Brooklyn podcast. These are guys who were respected in their sports. Now they're having platforms with other athletes who played, all have an opinion alongside me and you. Right. And so, yeah, I may tell Jerry to bleep off or whatever, but it's different when the guy like Carmelo, who's an all-star, has an opinion about me and my game, because not only was he better than me, but he's lived the lifestyle and he's dealt with the pressure in the same market. So it's just different. I think for Anthony right now, being 24 years old, playing for the Yankees, the expectation that comes with it, being a part of that lineup, I think a lot of it too is he was a fan of the Yankees. Right.
And so he grew up here.
So when you're playing for a team you rooted for and you understand the history and expectation that comes with it, the turnoff necessarily doesn't come from the outside source. It's because of what you expect out of yourself and what it means to wear that jersey.
But can you separate that, though? Can you separate what you expect from yourself and the expectations? Because I would think nobody wants more for you than you.
100%.
That having been said, you're also hearing it from every direction. On every platform.
The health, most people would tell you to just turn it off and not pay attention to it.
But can a 24-year-old do that?
A 24-year-old like most 24-year-olds right now, their biggest issue is social media. That's the biggest issue with Sauce Gardner, who I, you know, who I love Sauce's game. I know he's looking for a new deal.
Mm-hmm.
But the first thing I would tell him to do is like, hey, man, take your phone as far as you can and throw it into the Hudson River.
Yes.
And never pick it up again. If people want to contact you, they will be able to get to you, especially people close to you. I always appreciated what Baker Mayfield did when he left. I think it was whatever his last team was before he got there, before he landed in Tampa. He said, man, I was at a point in my career where I was getting teased for having more commercials than touchdowns. And I realized I had to do a self-audit. And when I did my self-audit, I had to turn my social media off because it was losing me money. It was losing me credibility, not amongst just the media, amongst my peers, mm-hmm. people who I was going to battle with. So he said, I turned off the social media. He lands in Tampa. Now we look at Baker Mayfield as a guy solely because he turned off his social media. And so for a lot of young guys, especially a 24-year-old kid who's, one, like you said, grew up loving the Yankees, playing for the Yankees, had, you know, we know what happened with him last year, and now his dad's involved. Because that was the hardest thing for me when I played. I had to tell my own family, stop, you know, they would see things or hear things on social media. I'm like, man, don't clap. My own wife, I think one of my ex-teammates said something on social media about me during my time with the Jets, and she clapped at him. And I said, we don't do that. Like that, we don't do that. We ignore it because anybody that really has something to say will text you. They have your number and say it. So out of that, just leave it alone. But for a 24-year-old guy like Volpe, I would just tell him turn off your social media, and it's not just going to work and grinding because obviously that's expected, but also do a self audit. What's distracting you outside of doing your job? And I think that goes for anybody in a professional realm. If you got an opportunity to do a self audit, do that. What's distracting you? What's holding you back? What are the things you did that you're not doing anymore, and vice versa? So it all comes down to the guy in the mirror. But it's tough to turn it off. It's tough to keep family out of it. But it's a lot harder on the ball player today because of everything that looms around them.
And you, as you said, like, it doesn't turn off ever.
There's no turn off.
You know, you want to say you turn off the radio, fine, but we're still going. Okay, then you turn on your phone, and there it is, right in front of you, staring you in the face.
But even when you watch, like, your, let's say if you're, like, me and you love golf, so we're always watching golf TV, but there's always that side commercial that pops up of some dude of, like, oh, Anthony Volpe strikes out again. It's like this, like, the little
the crawl.
It plays like,
oh, absolutely.
I can't even watch another channel before I pop back up.
I know.
So there is no turnoff. And so I have empathy for these guys. I just tell them right now, do the self audit. Get off social media. And not everything is worthy of a clapback.
Right.
Those guys have to realize.
And by the way, I'm not even sure. I don't even know if Anthony Volpe is on social media.
No.
I don't know what he sees. And the guy's point was, you know, we're constantly, whether he means all of us hosts here at FAN or, you know, the other sports, who knows, maybe the articles he's reading, but it's out there. The other thing, too, is
but
the
he only hears it if somebody's telling him about it. I only heard most of it if somebody saw it.
But that's because you turned everything off.
For the most part, I did.
And as we just discussed, it ended 9 years ago for you on the field when this was really starting to get hot. If you were playing, if Willie Colon was playing now in the prime of his career, let's say you're on the Jets right now and you're 28 years old in this land of social media where, let's be fair, everybody is trying to build their brand so that when they are finished playing, they can start that YouTube show or they can start their product line or whatever the hell it might be or their production company because everyone's got an eye towards the future now. Do you think 28-year-old Willie Colon in 2025 would be able to turn it off?
That's a good question. I think for my own, if I felt that it was hurting me, yes, I would be able to turn it
off. Okay, 24-year-old Willie Colon. And I only bring up the age because I know he's a professional. I get
it. Well, let me say this. The older I became, the more aware I became. Because when I was younger, I shouldn't be out here. I'm with the Pittsburgh Steelers. They just won the Super Bowl last year. I just keep my nose down and just grind it out. So I wasn't privy to a lot of what was being said about. As I got older and my name got out there and the more success I acquired, I started to bend my ear to what was being said about me. And I did find myself a little more kind of anxious around people who I think had a platform.
Right.
Instead of just being like, man, all right, that's their job. This is my job. Let me just go to work. I started being more tentative around people like that. So, yeah, it's tough.
Oh, it's tough, all right. There's no doubt. And it's one where, you know, I feel for the kid, but I also understand we do have a job to do. Like it or not, we do have a job to do. And if you're not going to perform, it's what's going to happen. It's just it's the nature of the business.
But I also think, too, a lot of what Anthony deals with is, you know, when you're standing on that field, you hear the boozing, you hear the conversations. And when you can hear somebody say Volpe X, Y, you know, whatever's coming out of their mouth. So that leans on you,
but
too.
But then, okay, then why do I hear from the star player, they will always tell you, I hear nothing. Meaning they're locked in.
They hear
in.
Nothing in the moment when they have to perform.
But you're just kind of meandering around the field, you hear
everything. 100%. When I'm on the field, I hear nothing. It literally is silent. It is 2-minute situations or 4th-and-1 with on TV, the screen is shaking, and I would say to myself, I didn't hear none of that, right? Because it's just a different frequency. But 100% sure, if I'm sitting on the sideline or if I'm at TV timeout, I hear it all.
Yeah.
Like, I hear it. I mean, my last name is Cologne, and I heard all type of butt jokes. All type of stuff, right? And so, yeah, I heard all of that. So it's just different.
Oh, the colon joke?
All of it.
Hey, Willie ass.
All of it.
Here's Anthony West Haven. What's up, Anthony?
Hey, the way I look at it today, it's even like when you're a little kid now, you know, and you go to school and these kids are getting bullied 24/7 because of the internet and because of media and they can't turn it off because it's everywhere. I mean, it's like, that's why I felt so bad for Volpe, because it's in the papers. He's probably hearing it when he goes home. His parents are probably giving him advice and what he should do. And so there's no way you can get away from it. There's no way you can escape it. You know, it's like 24/7. It's got to be in his mind. And you could see him at one point yesterday. You could see how frustrated he was. But after he hit that home run and he was running around the bases and he was getting the high fives at home plate, I felt so much better for him.
You're not wrong. And I will tell you this, Anthony. It's a good thing they won yesterday, too, because you had the whole thing with him hitting Judge in the head with the throw. I mean, had they lost that game and got swept by the Mets, like, that got a lot of play on social media, as you can imagine. But we'd be sitting here this morning saying, you know, they get hit in the head and he hits Judge in the head.
Beating the hell out that horse.
I mean, everything has just gone.
He didn't hit Jazz Chisholm.
No, he's Aaron Judge.
Aaron Judge bloodied him.
Lucky he didn't get him in the eye. You know, you feel for the kid. Duke and Elizabeth, what's up, Duke?
Yeah, hey, guys. I don't know if you remember this, but last year, Sal had the quest for the Phillies player for sympathy.
Oh, Trey
while
Turner.
He was doing, while he was in a slump, and now he won't have, give Volpe a chance and not criticize him. Remember that?
You know, that was Trey Turner, where they were saying he should cheer him, and they did. They cheered him in Philly, and he got going in the right direction.
Did he have a little more going on with him?
He might have. I don't know. And Duke, you're right. That Sal did have that point. But I think both things, they're not quite the same. Sal was reacting to a caller that basically said, we're the reason players don't do well here. And Sal's point was, well, what about, and he gave all the examples of players that have done great things in New York. And that's kind of where the conversation I was trying to guide it to in terms of being able to play in this market. You know, you played in Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh is not a huge market, comparatively speaking, to New York City. But you can't tell me that there's not as much pressure to play in Pittsburgh as there is to play for the Jets Giants. You just can't. It's got to be similar.
No, it's not.
In Pittsburgh, timeout. Didn't you not tell me that you had an old lady yell at you?
I'm saying the pressure is more.
In Pittsburgh?
Yes.
Right, okay.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I apologize.
And that's my point. Like, we sit here and say New York City, the end-all, be-all, yet I would think in smaller cities, it's almost worse.
It's worse in small cities, 100%. But I want to say this. I think for the fans, I think they also know there's, like, a little nuance. When a guy chooses to play here, they're not just choosing to play for the respected team. They're choosing to play here because of life after ball. And they understand, like, this guy's not just playing here because he wants to be a Jet Giant. They understand that. If I win in New York, this sets me up to your point earlier. This sets the foundation for life after ball, what I can do, X, Y, Z, the networking and the opportunities that come with it. And I tell everybody, you know, that was the hardest thing when I got to the Jets. I was sitting in a lot of these young guys down, like Snacks Harris, Damon Snacks Harris, Sheldon Richardson, Mo Wilkins, and all these guys. Like, dog, if you win in New York, you're done. Like, I mean, like, you getting steak.
Especially for the Jets.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Seriously. I was like, you bring this team to, if we can lock in and win, I'm talking about free Dennis. I'm talking about stepping in. Your wife wants to go to Broadway Theater. There's a phone call you can make. You're sitting in the best seat in the house because you won here in New York. You know what I mean? Like, and I was like, I was getting that treatment in Pittsburgh. And Valley's historic blue blood team and everything that comes along with being a Steeler. But I'm like, it's a different, like, you, those restaurants you never heard of or you just got is invite only. Now you're sitting in those rooms, right?
Now you're on the list.
Yes. And I was beat Jerry. I'm going to say it. I don't care. I was in a, we were in a nightclub. It was called Finales. It was down at in Chinatown at Lower East Side, man. And I used to go out there. I knew the place really well. And a couple, and I had just got to the Jets. And these young, we were, at 2013, we were like the second youngest team in the league. So a lot of talent, a lot of young guys. And we were all having a night. I'm just going to leave it like we're doing everything we were doing, right? And I looked at these guys, and I could see how much fun they was having. Because, one, they got money. They got the notoriety. They all, you know, we're all jeweled up, and we everybody notices us. I'm like, so I was like, imagine this feeling right now. Imagine when you win. imagine this feeling. Like, when you win, you get that times five, and you can do it all over the country. So I was just trying to map out to these guys, like, if this is what you love, great. But now let's win. Let's take this winning that we're all here to do, and we could do this everywhere. And then here, it's nuts. And they all looked at me like, yeah, right. Okay, Willie. At that point, I was a little seasoned in my career, so they started calling me OG and uncle, which is when I knew I was on my last leg. But I was just trying to show them, man, like, man, winning brings a lot.
Yeah.
But you got to win. You can't have the lifestyle without the winning. So.
And you do it here, it could be better than anywhere.
Forget about it.
First of all, it's the best win of the season by far. It was awesome. It was, and it looked different. You know, it's not like they bludgeoned somebody 9-8. It's not like they won 7-6 or they had, you know, just some crazy explosion where it was rocket after rocket after rocket. 2-run bomb here, 3-run bomb there. It was a grinding win, which quite frankly has not been a characteristic of the Yankees for far too long, which is why, one of the reasons why the Yankees not won a World Series in so long. Now, obviously, you know, if you're getting signs from second base, that doesn't hurt. But the at-bats by Ben Rice, the at-bat by Wells, the at-bat by Grisham, those were old-school things that the Yankee teams, that all Yankee fans miss and love and will always cherish. That's what they used to do. Now, does it keep up? I don't know. But for a night, I mean, that's what a team that can actually mess around and win something is supposed to look
like.
It's about time, Sal.
The offense at the end of the game, you know, Giancarlo pinch hitting and hitting the big home run. That's why he's there. Gets them back in the game, gives them some life. And then the late innings, obviously, the Yankees with the comeback. That is the Yankees of old. But it was one game. And you could see, we talked about this last week. You could see the offense. It's why I thought the Yankees were going to bury the Mets over the course of the weekend, because the offense, even in the losses in Toronto, was starting to click. Although you saw it the first two games in Seattle, and then last night they go out there and get no hit for the first seven innings. So I think people, it's easy to overlook because of the comeback win, and that's what everybody's focused on. And I understand that. It's a great comeback win. Yankees of old, look at the power display, look at those at-bats, savages in the box, all that stuff. Easy to forget that they were getting shut down for seven innings. That can't happen. And that's the type of pitching with Wu that you're going to see in the postseason. Not that I'd be worried about Seattle, although their arms are dangerous.
Very.
But the fact that this Yankee team, again, you know, the first couple of games, blowouts, bludgeoning the Mariners to death and being that bully ball type. And then last night was going the way that we've seen far too often, getting no hit, on the verge of getting no hit and getting shut down. So to be able to come back and steal that win is great. But there still are some flaws with this team. The fact that they could get no hit for seven innings. Like, getting shut down happens, getting no hit again, that to me is not a great thing for the Yankees.
Well, I mean, but it's going to happen to every great team. I mean, to me, a matter of fact, that's why last night to me was so impressive, because it went against the grain of who they've been. And that's why I said what I said to start. Like, I would rather win that way rather than 9-2. You know, when you're playing downhill and you're in bullpens and you just mashing everybody's teeing off, pardon me, I don't think it's a real accurate representation of who you are as a team. Now, I'm not getting on the air today saying that I think that last night is now emblematic of this Yankee team's moving forward. I can't say that, because I don't believe that. I haven't seen that except really for last night, those grind out at bats. But I think the fact that they were no hit and the fact that they beat the crap out of them earlier in the series by, you know, winning the way that they usually win, to me, that shows a diversity and a baseball character that this team hasn't had forever.
Yeah, I mean, that's a traditional classic Yankee win, and you just felt it coming late in the innings. You saw the relievers, whether he was tipping pitches or not, it doesn't matter. You saw them, you know, soiling themselves at the side of the big bad Yankees in the box, and the Yankees were playing downhill, knowing they were going to force the issue, draw the walks when there, hit the ball hard somewhere when that's there. So it was a vintage Yankees offensive performance at the end of that game. Unfortunately, also a recent vintage Yankees performance for the first seven innings of that game where the big bad Yankees get no hits. So it's got to be somewhere in between. I think they could find it. Offensively, I would not worry about the Yankees. I said that earlier in the week. I said that going into the Subway Series a week ago today on 4th of July. The offense to me is clicking. Or if it wasn't clicking then, it was just about to get clicking. So you're seeing the best of that now. It's the other areas that I would be concerned. And there was some good last night. Devin Williams, obviously, in the extra inning.
They look good.
Came with the shutdown inning. But they'll tighten up the bullpen. They'll make some moves here. But again, it feels like now season back on for the Yankees after sweeping the Mariners, which was as unlikely as you could have thought going into this series.
Well, there's no doubt that there's been a regeneration here. And again, it was a regeneration that I did not see coming. And I don't know how long this lasts. I hope it lasts for, you know, the rest of the season. I didn't see it, which is why I got on the air the other day and I said sell. And by the way, I stand by that. There's the pieces now, not every one of them, but one of the things that I said the other day was, you know, we've all said this, get rid of DJ. I said straight up sell Grisham to open up an avenue for Dominguez, and I even said that I would trade Goldschmidt and that would open up a little Ben Rice or a little Bellinger at first base and things that they could do. I stand by all that. So if anybody's going to call up with the flip-flops, bring it on. I mean, that's fine, because I stand by that. And again, I don't know where this goes. I don't know. But I do know this. Now, I'm not saying that there wasn't a game or two over the last 10, 12, 13 years, right, where the Yankees went back to the Bernie at bats and the Tino at bats and the Jeter at bats and the Posada at bats and the O'Neill at bats. Those grind out, you know, taxing, demoralizing at bats that just snatch the soul of the opposing team's pitching staff. I don't know if they're going to morph into that. If I had to bet money, I would say it's probably more likely that they don't than that they do, because there's just not a lot of overwhelming evidence with this crew. But again, last night felt different. It looked different. Tasted a little different. Last night was awesome for the Yankees.
I will say this, and I still don't think they're a World Series team, but I do think that their offense is World Series caliber. That's an offense that you look at when they're clicking like that, not just the stand home runs,
yeah,
or the barrage of home runs with Jazz. Like, it's like to be him a better hitter, but when they're giving those at-bats like they had, you could just feel the challenge from the opponent's perspective of how hard it is to get through that lineup, and it is deeper than most. So with Dominguez in the leadoff spot, again, I know, you know, whatever, last night they had, it wasn't the exact lineup that we wanted with Grisham in center field, which, by the way, if he's hurt or compromised, yeah, why is he out in center field? Because that ball that he let drop earlier in that game that cost the Yankees a run, he's got to make that play.
Well, there was an incident last year, where, and Boone even got on him a little bit there, where he was kind of loafing after, yeah, I think it was a base hit, and it kind of muffed, it was like a four-hopper to center, didn't catch it cleanly. Sometimes he plays so casually because, now I'm not making an excuse. I mean, you got a bust hump. I don't care if you're Juan Soto getting down the first baseline. I don't care if you're Grisham gap to gap coming in, going back. Play the game hard. Like, to me, there are a lot of things wrong with both of these teams, and a lot of things right. But the one thing that we should never have to go through on a consistent basis is effort.
Right, but if he wasn't, I'll give him a pass because he's nursing a hamstring.
I understand, but don't play him
there. Yeah, bingo. Then he shouldn't be out there. Yeah. Well, if you do want to get his bat, then put him at DH. Like, I don't figure it out. You can't have him in center field.
Yeah, I know.
Dropping a ball that could have been a can of corn for him, especially.
Ah, that was a good spot to put Dominguez in center. That's something that I would have done. I don't think they'll do that midseason. That's one of the many storylines with this team. But no, I'm not going to push back on that. If you're not healthy, don't play.
And that's,
or
again,
don't play the field.
And now they're able to come back and win the game. But again, little nitpicky things from last night. The bottom line is this, that the Yankees offense, if the pieces are in the right place, Dominguez, Judge, Bellinger, you know, Stanton behind him, Jazz, that Wells starting to hit a little bit, Goldschmidt in there, that is a lethal Yankees offense. So they could add a third baseman, and I expect that they will, but I think their offense will be consistent enough to warrant being feared come postseason.
Well, I think that you're right, but if they don't get a third baseman, which they will, I would imagine, they'll definitely get some relief arms. They'll probably get a starter. If those things don't come in, then, you know, there's a window, there's a ceiling for this team, but it's not the World Series championship.
Well, think about it this way, though. The X factor, at least for me, from my perspective, like, I don't believe what Jazz has done since he's been back is sustainable. I just don't think he's that type of offensive player. The power, yeah, I don't think the average, the contact, that's going to be there. If it is, it's a game changer. Do I believe Dominguez can be a game changer atop the order? I do. And that's
no question for me.
That's part of the reason why, even last night, the 0 for 3 and 2 nights ago, the 0 for 5, whatever. I don't care about that. His speed, number one, his ability to put the bat on the ball, like there are, and the potential power to come. I believe he could be a game changer at the top. And the other guy is going to be Bellinger for me, because if he is this hitter, what's he hit now? 280, even over 280?
He's had two 15 game hit streaks. Yeah, two this season.
He's hitting exactly 280.
Like two 15 game hit streaks.
280 with that pop.
With speed, with defense.
Protecting Judge, knowing that you got the threat of Giancarlo behind you. Now, the question is going to be, of course, are they going to be able to get it done in the postseason? But like I said, if you have that balance, that's what would get you excited. Not to mention the platoon possibilities with Ben Rice and either Stanton or Goldschmidt. The defensive replacements, like they haven't with Grisham, assuming he's healthy and can
play. But that's why I'm open to moving Goldschmidt still. I want more for Ben Rice.
Yeah, but then you
want him to play more.
Then I think you lose a right-handed bat and a veteran.
But if you get a better stick at third base, who's going to be a righty unless it's McMahon, well, that might offset that. The problem solved.
I just don't think there's a need to do it. Boone can balance which time he wants to
get
a certain guy.
Ben Rice didn't play for a couple days.
I know, but Goldschmidt's been fine.
The numbers are fine, but has he really been fine since he was hitting 330?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not trying to pick on the guy.
No, I get it.
He's been in a swoon.
I think the offense, you could see this coming at least a week ago, and now you're starting to see a click. Now, I'm not going to go nuts because they swept the Mariners and say, well, it's going to win the World Series. Like, we talked about it earlier in the week. Baseball's a long season. So however you felt on Monday morning about the Yankees is different how you feel on Friday, certainly after a sweep of a very good ball club with the Mariners and their pitching to boot. Now, let's see what happens with the Cubs. Let's see what moves they make, but I think as far as being a legitimate World Series contender, where when they get swept by the Blue Jays, fall out of first place, all that stuff is back on the table if it were ever off the table. Certainly, to me, I still think they're better than Toronto. Like, I see it. It's a long season here, but a very encouraging three games.
I'm definitely more a believer in Toronto than you. I've been saying that for a while. I remember I referenced the stat the other day. Their 7, 8, 9 hitters combined have the best average in baseball. So I think they're a little more dangerous than you. But I'll tell you one thing, and it's finally nice to be able to say this. Because, you know, we've had a lot of conversations, and largely hollow ones, because I don't think many of us thought over the years that it was going to ever equate to a championship. How many times, whether it's you and I, whether it's the afternoon show, well, everybody at the Fan, the Yankees, right? Well, hey, well, they're still top five at OPS. Hey, they're still top three, top five at home runs. And I never really bought that because we've learned that October baseball, it's a different profile. It's a different level of execution. It looks different. It feels different. Different pitching, situational hitting. You've got to be different than just blasting home runs. That's why last night was awesome. Because if I just parachuted in and I didn't know where I was, I very easily could have been watching Bernie, Jeter, and Tino. But it was one night.
Right.
The challenge, if this is who they're going to morph into, then it's game on.
BT and Sal and the Fan, our friends at Town Fair Tire, remind you that at Town Fair Tire, you always get the guaranteed lowest price on name brand tires from Connecticut to Maine. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. Mike is in Tom's River. What's up, Mike?
Hey, Mike.
How you doing, guys?
Good.
All right. So I love you guys. You know that. I hate the Mets, so Sal, this might come off a little crazy here, but I think you're crazy. The Yankees, we all know. You just said I'm not worried about the offense. You're not worried about the offense. For 10 years, the offense is what doomed them. They can't hit in clutch situations against good pitching. They can't. The other night they were. By the way, they won the other night before the rain delay. They were getting shut out again. They cannot hit good pitching. This is a problem. You cannot say that the hitting is okay. That's number one. Just a side point before you guys.
But are you talking about postseason or are you talking about now?
I'm talking about even now. No. Listen, you'll make the postseason because you'll beat up on bad pitching.
No, but their strength.
Your hitting sucks.
That's just not true. Now, last night again, I told you I would be concerned about getting shut down, no hit for 7 innings. But overall, look at the Yankee lineup and look at it in comparison to the other teams around baseball. That is a potent. Go ahead.
No, disagree.
Okay.
Disagree.
Okay.
Number one. Number two, why can't the Yankees? I mean, I hate to praise anything about the Mets, but they got a guy now, Keith
Wright.
Why
are you talking about the Mets? I don't get it.
We'll get
to it. I just listen to my point. My point is Keith Wright is good. What the hell? Why is, I mean, I know he's a company guy.
Just spit it out.
Very nice kid. But Emmanuel Barbari's call to end the game last night was atrocious.
Oh, stop, man. We're not going to let you dog on one of our teammates. Get lost, dude. All right, listen, first of all, radio host and play-by-play, that's all subjective. If you don't think, you know, somebody's good, that's fine. Right. But that's not flying. He's a teammate. He's part of the station, part of the family. That's it.
Yeah, and I personally think he's very good and a great young kid.
Terrific young man. He really is a good kid.
Yeah, and he's filling in. He's the backup for Dave Sims right
now. 25 years old, whatever he is.
That's your takeaway? That's your takeaway from last night? Is Emmanuel Babari doesn't do it for you on the final call? Jesus. I mean, come on now.
No, but I'll tell you, I heard C-Mac say one thing this morning, right? When he finally mixed in some baseball in between Paul McCartney and Beatles talk right now. I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
And he's right. And Jerry agreed. Like, the way the micro-analyzation of both of these teams, but specific to the Yankee conversation now, obviously, it has stripped away so much of the joy year after year. And I'm resistant to that. Like, I'm not saying I never fall prey to it because I complain a lot, obviously. But the Yankees and what has become a very almost unhappy fan base is it's just too much. It's becoming too much. And I don't mean like, you know, talking about the first seven innings with no hits. Yeah. That's a baseball conversation. I'm talking about just not enjoying the ride at all. I don't get it. Like, it just, each year, I think the Yankee fan, more than the Met fan, the Yankee fan just does not enjoy the journey at all anymore.
Just because of chasing the World Series?
Yeah, it's like, you don't win. It's a waste of time. And I get that in totality, but that doesn't mean that the checkpoints getting there or not getting there can't be appreciated.
But you do understand the frustrations. Obviously, you understand it more than most because you complain about this team just as much as anybody else.
I do, but it doesn't mean like, again, this guy's a Yankee fan called about it barbarian.
That's
kind of a representation, not the play-by-play voice, but I think that's a good representation of a lot of the complaints. Now, I'm still saying they should sell. They should still sell. Nothing unclear about that. They should still sell certain pieces. But God, last night was amazing.
Right, but think about the difference. Like, for me, the frustration with the Yankees for years has been their belief in certain players or belief in moving certain players to certain positions that just did not make any sense.
Yeah, oh, me too.
Okay, so, but they were doing that, and they've done it. It's not just this example with Jazz and DJ. They were doing that this year. It's mid-July, and we're begging for the same thing basically 2 years ago. So finally, they change it. That is a breath of fresh air and lets us relax and say, okay, well, at least they showed us they have a clue instead of frustrating us by moving one piece back to his normal position and getting rid of the useless piece. That is refreshing. And by the way, I don't think it's coincidence that the wins have followed that. Now, I also don't think it's a direct correlation to that one or two moves, but it at least helps ease the level of frustration from fans where you're like, why are you playing this guy out of position? Why are you still rostering LeMay? You can't help us. Okay, well, those two talking points, big complain issues with the Yankees.
Yeah, thank God.
They're gone.
Silenced.
And they, exactly.
I know.
And now it's deep breath. Okay, let's evaluate the team again. And I think you can look at it and say, well, yeah, they got no hit for seven innings, and that would worry me against good pitching come postseason. I think that's fair. I brought it up. But I also would look at this team and say, watch other teams in Major League Baseball. Look at their lineups in comparison to the Yankees. With Dominguez to the leadoff spot, with Bellinger being as hot as he is, with Stanton's threat back, even though I don't love him.
And not an everyday player, by the way. That's another subtle adjustment they made. He's not playing every day.
Which could maybe keep him healthy, you hope. Who knows? Boom. But either way, he's a threat in the batter's box. That is a threatening, deep Yankee lineup. Probably as deep as... Now, we'll see the Cubs come into town this week. That's a deep lineup as well.
Yeah, but they have a very good lineup. That's true.
And what happens in the postseason? Who the hell knows?
No idea.
They're going to have to prove themselves, specifically Aaron Judge. Like, nobody has questions about Judge until the postseason. But in reality, that is one of the more dangerous lineups in all the sport.
I agree. I still need to do a couple things, and I think that they will. But the bottom line is this, or I think we could finally say this, that Mike and Chris, you know, got Mike Piazza here, and BT and Sal got DJ LeMahieu DFA'd.
Get Jazz back to second and LeMahieu DFA.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.